Today, it's a pleasure for me to give you an introduction into the very early game history. Maybe first I must excuse myself. I have a little bit of temperature, so if I'm not speaking that fluently, it's because I'm ill. And okay, the situation I found before I started this little research project was that there's for sure a huge computer history, and this starts with the Abacus, and I'm pretty sure most of you know this timeline. But in this established computer history, usually games are not mentioned, or if they are mentioned, they are just mentioned as not very important. Then there's the other group of researchers. These are the video game or the computer game researchers, and usually this history, this timeline, starts in the early 60s. And so there's somehow, if you want to describe it in that way, a dark age of computer game history. And this is from the late 40s up to the early 60s. And that's our topic here. And I compiled some informations, and what I'm doing here is now to tell you a little bit about the computer history. I'm pretty sure I don't must tell you that much. But I focus on games. That's the new thing, that I structure everything into the direction of games. All right, so please, if you have any questions or comments, feel free to express it instantly. So this is usually one of these little stories which were told from the computer historists. This Schachtürke, this is the fake machine. It's meant to be a machine which can beat humans playing chess, but actually it's just a fake. There's a dwarf sitting in this machine, and this is a quite famous story. So the inventor of the Schachtürke gets very famous in his time, and also this story is very well known in this timelines of computer history, because it's a nice story, and but it shows that that they tried, or that there is a wish before computers exist that humans can play against machines. At this time in the 18th century, for sure, the technique was not that far developed, was not existent, and so it's just a fake. But the wish was already there. And to answer the question of the question, just at the beginning of the talk, when was the very first computer game program? What is the earliest computer game? It's somehow a simple answer. The long computers exists, the long exists computer games. So the problem is more to find documents about these early games, and I have found some documents I will show you right now. And the interesting thing is that I found every aspect which is connected in nowadays with computer games. Science, okay, it's not the most important aspect, but it becomes an important aspect more and more. Business, for sure, it's making money, and fun. Entertaining people. These three aspects I found very early, I want to give you now examples for every of these aspects. And I want to start with science. And if I tell you about games and science, so if I say games, I mean computer games. Then I must tell you about chess and about noughts and crosses. So these are the two games which were very important for the people who built these early computers. As you know, as you might know, these early, very first computers are developed in the framework of the Second World War, the Colossus computer, secret projects, and for a special purpose, not to invent a computer, but to decode the German Enigma. And so these were the first computers. For sure, we also have here in Germany Konrad Zuse. And so these very few computers which exists as first computers were exist in the Second World War because of the Second World War, and were mostly secret projects. And so this is one problem why I was not able to found very early. Examples very early means in the 40s, in the time during the Second World War. But as you can see, the history of computer chess, these started very early, in 1940. And there was one of the big names in computer history, Shannon, Claude Shannon. The other one is Alan Turing in UK. These both were very interested in making a machine which can play chess. And I used the occasion of a very nice online exhibition at the Computer History Arc Museum in California to show you one or two documents which show why they are interested, and this is somehow astonishing. So this is this is a very good exhibition. I suggest if you are interested to go a little bit deeper into the chess history to have a look at this. And what I want to show you here now is here you see this is the Schachtürke also. And then they, Shannon and others, did paper programs in the early 40s. They wrote chess programs, and because there were no computer which can execute these programs, they did it by themselves, and so they compete against each other. They calculating their own programs by their wetware, and to figure out which program is the best, and so that shows that that the wish to make computers play is a very, very early wish. It's earlier than also the first computers. And here you see there's one picture. This is the document of this entry, 1940. They also build machines. These are somehow dedicated gaming consoles, if you want it that way. So this machine only could play chess and nothing else. But for sure, these machines were far, far away to be a serious competitor for a human. And to answer the question why they have such a strong interest in making a computer play, I would like to show you one other text of Claude Shannon. And there he explains how computer chess programs should look. And he also explains why they are for the scientists from interest, and it's this one here, programming a computer to play chess. It's published 1950. It's written 1949. And I just show you the beginning of it. And that's surprising. It's so I make it a little bit bigger. Oops. Oh God, what's up here? Sorry, don't know. It's a little bit too small. Maybe this size here. Is it okay? No. So, and he said it. This paper is concerned with the problem of constructing a computer routine, a program for modern general-purpose computer. This was a big thing, a general-purpose computer. This was a new thing at this time, which will enable it to play chess. And then it's very interesting that he stated, all thought perhaps of no practical importance, the question is of theoretical interest, and it is hoped that a satisfactory solution of this problem will act as a wedge in attacking other problems of a similar nature and of greater significance. Some possibilities in this direction are, now he counts what he think computer made in the future. Machines for designing filters and equalizers, okay. Machines for designing relay and switching circuits. Machines which will handle routing of telephone calls based on the individual circumstances rather than by fixed pattern. This was one of the most important things to learn. A computer play means that the computer must be able to decide. He must be able to decide which move is better than the other. And this is the groundbreaking idea which is connected to this chess playing problem. Machines for performing symbolic, non-numerical mathematical operations. So for sure, computers are only symbolic if you are not if you have not the skills like you have. So for me, they are 100% symbolic. Machines capable of translating from one language to another. Machines for making strategic decisions in simplified military operations. Machines capable for orchestrating a melody. That's an interesting point also. We will have a very nice example at the end of the talk. And machines capable of logical deduction. So, and as you can see, this is a really broad and but very right Vorhersage, prediction, thank you, what computers will be. And that this is so strong connected to chess is one of the interesting founds I did in this little research project. Okay, let's go back. now we come to Noughts and Crosses. So this is the English name in America. It is called Tic-Tac-Toe, and so I'm sure you all know the game, and this is somehow the little brother of the chess program. As you have seen, it was not possible to implement this thinking and these thoughts and these paper programs into an existing machine then. But it was possible to build a Noughts and Crosses computer, or to program a computer at this time to play Noughts and Crosses, because it is much simpler. But it's somehow also a strategic game, and a lot of these problems Shannon wants to solve with the chess game also could be found here, or are also connected with Noughts and Crosses. But it's also there are some connections to the fun part and the entertainment part also. And what is great here, I can show you I can show you at least one example, because there's an emulator existing, and I can show you how it looked. So the first Noughts and Crosses I found was in 1950, programmed by a Bletchley Park veteran. And Bletchley Park, this is the laboratory where the Colossus computer was developed. So this secret military project, it was kept secret until the early 70s. And people like him who invented this Colossus computer for sure keep on working with computers, and he is the first example what I found. And as you can see, this is the Pilot Ace computer. It's an English computer. And this is the time where the purpose of the computer construction shifted a little bit from the military complex up to the commercial complex. So the computers which were invented in the Second World War were there, in spite of the World War was over. And now the people think, what can we do with these computers? And they keep developing these computers, and they also start thinking selling these computers as a commercial product. This is somehow a new thought at this time, but this happened, and we are in this time right now. And here you can see for which purposes this Pilot S computer were used. And that's one interesting thing I want to show you here. It's impossible to see. It's very small here, but I can show you a closer picture. Oops. Oh, no. Okay, no. I'm sorry. The knots and crosses I want to show you is programmed now at the EdSec computer. I haven't found the knots and crosses programmed on the Pilot Ace computer, but it's somehow very similar. And so I want to show you here. These are early monitors. This was quite usual at this time, so that there were monitors connected for debugging purposes, only to see what's going on in the registers, what's going on in the memory, what's going on in the machine, and if you have the skills, you can translate it, and you know the machine is still doing right or it's doing wrong, and then you have to change something. So this was quite usual this time, so that you have, while the computer was calculating, to change, that you have to change parts of the computer. These are usually big tubes which were not that stable. And so these three monitors, I have a closer picture here. Here you can see it, you can see the pictures. So usually the monitor shows pictures like this here, so it's more or less abstract unless you don't know what it means. And what these early game programmers did are actually just hacks. So they make pictures on this debugging monitors, which makes sense for us. And that's for us, or let's say for me as a non-specialist. And here you see what's shown on one of these three monitors, and we see the game of knots and crosses and tic-tac-toe. And let's step into it, let's play it. Okay. Usually, so I thought it's working with drag and drop. Sorry, why does this? Was was? Das kann natürlich auch sein, dass ich es mit Kopieren machen muss. Okay. Er kopiert nicht. Ich bin mir ziemlich sicher. I'm pretty sure that it's working with drag and drop. So here you see the program. Okay. Maybe here. Ah, maybe this. Yeah. So here you can see what these monitors usually show when the computer was calculating. And there you can see how long it needs to load the program. Yes, for sure. Sorry. I can't make it bigger, so. So now it's after, so I can start. So I dial. This is the input interface. There. So I start, and so the field right below is the 1, and the field left above is the 9. So I start with right. Okay, I have the crosses, and he has the nodes. Don't know. So okay, then I try here. This one. This must be the 7. All right. So now I must enter 6. Now 8. Okay, and now 3, and it's a drawn game, which is quite usual if you play knots and crosses. All right, so this is, I think that gives you a good impression under which circumstances and these early game programmers programmed games, and this is also a game. It was used to as a fun game from the scientists who work with these EdSec computers. It's also an English computer, but it was programmed not only because of entertainment purposes. All right, then we come to the next story. To kill, how can I kill this
program?
Ah, stop. I should stop it. No, no. Here, I do it this way. Okay. So now we come to the second aspect, and this aspect is business. And I've heard a very interesting story about how games were connected in 1950 also to business, to making business. And this is somehow very astonishing if you remind yourself that at this time computers were still very, very, existed in very, very small numbers. But not by chance, this game is connected with the Ferranti Mark I computer. The Mark I computer was one of these very early computers developed in Manchester for military purposes and so on. And after that, they decided to make a commercial version out of it, and they invited the company Ferranti to join the project and to develop a commercial version of this Mark I computer. And this commercial version was called Ferranti Mark I computer. And what do you do if you want to sell a computer? You must go to people who might buy this machine. And so this is exactly what Ferranti did. They go to fairs. And the first fair they visited was 1950 in London, an industrial fair. What we see here is a picture taken 1 year later in Berlin, just around the corner in Charlottenburg. And the second thing they did to sell the computer or to impress people there at this fair was that they reconstructed It is the example of the first dedicated gaming console, what we have here right now. They rebuild it and make a version out of it. They call Nimrod, and this version of the Ferranti Mark I only could do one program, a game, and the game was called Nim, and the console was named Nimrod. What we see here is the display at the Berlin Fair here, 1951, and you see there above, you see the display, the monitor, if you want so, and here you see players. Maybe I ask you, do you recognize one of the players here in the first row? This is Ludwig Erhard. That's the player here at the picture. It's the former German business minister. And also in the background, you know this guy here? So I'm pretty sure if Gerhard Schröder would join the Games Convention in Leipzig, it would be a huge sensation. But then at the beginning, was somehow usual that at the very first games, so the most important people in Germany have a match against this computer. And I show you the game. It's a traditional game of matches. And so they chose this game because it fits very well into their needs. And okay, something is happening. So how late is it? Yeah. That's good. That's good. So why this is done? So what's the problem here? Also, my computer is somehow historic, so it needs an upgrade. Okay, but it's no problem. Now I show you my hard disk. I think it's not very interesting. Okay. So here we are. This is this one should work. Why? Is this Firefox? No, could be. I tried once to cancel it, but so I got the feeling that Windows don't want to make me cancel the Explorer, so I left it at my hard disk, but at least I canceled it from this list, but somehow it's a small success, but okay. So, why don't this work? This is I don't give up. I don't give up. See, I'm really a drag and dropper. I like drag and drop, and it works. So, fine. You know who you are applauding with this. All right, so here we see the matches, and this is somehow what the visitors here, the players can see in the place at the fair. It's every light represents one of the match, and so the computer can tell the player what matches he draws and what matches he left. And so the aim of the game is to be the last one who draws one or three, from one until three matches. And so the one who did this as the winner, but you are not allowed, or you are only allowed to draw matches from one row. So there's somebody who wants to play, please. So I'm just shout and I take it away. So PC begins. So he takes the first match at the top. What should we take now? So from one until three matches, but only from one row we can take. So please, tell me. Pardon?
Take one of another row.
Yeah, just this one. All right, this one. So he takes the other two of this row.
Take two of the next row.
All right. He takes two of the last row.
All three from the middle line.
Yeah, all right. Okay. You're clever gamers, so you know we don't have a chance here anymore. So maybe another game and we start. We start now. So who wants to start?
You can't win this game when you, or the second player can force the other player to be the winner, to lose.
Yeah, that's right. So if you know how the game, if you know these small rules, it's very difficult to be beaten. And it's very easy to teach the computer, this early computer, this game, because he must not have the overview about the whole game field, but he only must know three or four very simple rules. So if your opponent takes this, then just take that. And the computer must not know anything more. So this is the reason why Ferranti chose this game, because it's simple for the computer to execute, but it's also impressive for the human players, because usually they don't have a chance to win against the computer unless they don't know these little tricks and these little rules. All right. So, and this is business. Why is this business? It is business because they made this Nimrod gaming console only for selling the Ferranti Mark I computer. And after the fair in Berlin, they reassembled the Nimrod gaming console and did a Mark I computer again from out of it, which they want to sell. And so I think this is really impressing story, and I also can show you or can provide you with a broadcast, a radio broadcast at this time. So what we hear now, and maybe are there little speakers here which can be connected to my little computer here? So maybe that is
already connected.
So
we should have that table for the.
Oh, here. I have it. So, and this gives you an impression what the atmosphere at this time was, and it was mostly mystical being computers. So it was connected with a lot of utopische visions, and a little bit. I think you can get a clue by hearing this little broadcast.
like everyone else, I came to a standstill before the electric brain, or, as they prefer to call it, the Nimrod digital computer. This looks like a tremendous grey refrigerator, and it has more wiring in it than the rest of the exhibition put together, and I'm not surprised. It's absolutely terrifying. What you do, if you have the courage, is to volunteer to play a game against this machine. It's based on the old game where you have four heaps of matches, and each player takes one or more away, but only from one heap, and the person who takes the last match wins. Only the machine has lights instead of matches, which go out when you press a button to take them away. It sounds simple enough, but you wouldn't think so if you saw this machine. I suppose at the next exhibition, they'll even have real heaps of matches, and awful steel arms will come out of the machine to pick them up. Hi, everyone else. I came to...
Yeah, ist das schon eitoll, was da prophetisch vorausgesehen hat? I don't know. Okay. So, and now we come to the last part, and this is for sure the fun part. And I will show you some examples that are somehow collected by chance. So I think, and that's what I told you before, that since the first computer exists, games were programmed. And so I was lucky to get in contact with people who built people who worked, to be precise, at the very first Australian computer. The Australian computer is the Cyrec computer. I visited Melbourne, and so I was introduced to this computer. It's called the last of the first. One reason, because he was very long in operation. He was used very long until the late 60s. And the other reason why it is called the last of the first is that it's the only of these very first computers which is rebuilt in a museum, and it can be seen there in the Melbourne Museum in the state, not in the working state, but in the form of in his original form. I show you some pictures. Here you see it's they started building this computer in 49. It was also intended to make a commercial product line out of it, but maybe because of the close relationship to England, they skipped this ambition, and so it remained only this single computer. But as I said, this computer were used until the late 60s, and it's yeah, here you can see, what you can see here. Oh, that's a nice one. You see if what it means to have a LAN party with a computer and so. Tough guys. Then today. All right. But I also want to show you here these. You see here six monitors, and these monitors are now important for the games. And also here these light rows. These are also lights which give the people, the operators, a clue if the computer is operating right or wrong. And so these are all controlling devices, all controlling interfaces. But they were used also for play games. And this is what I want to show you now. As I said, I'm lucky to be in contact of Dick Jensen. He worked there at the Cyrec computer since 57, and since 57 he wrote games, in total five games, which are still existing, and that's interesting because it's now existing in an emulator, and I can show you some of these games. This emulator is also programmed by someone who worked at this computer, John Spencer, and he found the paper tapes and just implemented this game paper tapes in the emulator, and so we have five of these very early games available, and I can show you some of these games. Zark, that's it. So here, there's also a version of Nim. So I asked Dick Jensen if he know about this story before, and he said no, I haven't noticed this then, but it's interesting to know. But it's not that surprising because yeah, it's.
Verehrte Kongressteilnehmer, in wenigen Minuten wird der Gewinner der Fotoausstellung am Wikipedia-Stand bekannt gegeben. Vielen Dank.
Is somebody here who take part of this? No. Okay. Maybe we start with a little one. It's Kalender. It's not really a game, but it's fun. We have today the 13th. I just entered here 12/5/006, and as we can see, Saturday. So it works. Okay, this one here, Telepath. This was a quite famous game in this facility where the Sarek was working. Telepath. It was used by the people who work with the computer. It was not written because of any ambitious research project. It was written by fun, and it was played by fun, and somehow it's still fun. So what we see here, this is this is one of these light rows above the monitors here, and the one means that this light is on, and the aim is now to make the light go to the right. If it went to the right, if it goes to the right, I am the winner. If it's to the left, the computer is the winner. And what is this game about? So the computer guesses which direction I do. So I can press the 1, that means left, and I can press the 9 or the 0. No, 1 and 0, genau. I can press 0 if I said right. And before, the computer guessed what I did, and if he's right, then the lamp goes to the left, and if he's wrong, if he guessed wrong, it goes to the right. So tell me, right, left, someone. Is somebody here who wants to... Ooh, left. All right, left. In which direction it goes? To the right. Then, so he guessed wrong, and it's good. Now go on.
Left.
Loose.
Okay, left again.
Perfect again. Loose again. Left, all right. Right. Okay. It's a game which can be played very fast. At least at this computer. I don't know how long this Sarek computer needs to calculate.
Right.
Oh. Left, right.
Left, right.
All right. Okay, left, right. Okay, and now he won. So somehow it's a simple and funny game, but it still makes some fun. And so Dick Jensen told me the story that there was a woman, a colleague of them, who used to win every time against Telepath. And so he was really angry about that, and so he made an advanced version of Telepath. It's called Ball. I have it here also as an emulator version. And so the rules are slightly different. What happens is if you win the second time, it's not only 1 point going to the right, but 2. And if you won, or the computer wins to the third time, then 3. So it's much faster. And so these are... this is Ball here, and now I show you React. This is an action game, which does nothing else than calculating the time between these. Here we must look at this row also again. And if there's one light flashing, I have to press the press enter to start or X to exit. I think it's the space, and then he just tell me how long I need. So I start. That was very bad. You see here? Yeah, not very good, but because I pressed the wrong button. Let's start again. Oh no, I must restart it. That's the problem here. So it only could execute it once. Then it freezes. All right. So now I'm trying to be better. Ah, you see? Here. Okay. Yeah, you can play this against each other, and the one with the best reaction time is the winner. It's very easy, and So only a few minutes are left, and now I show you how this fun part, which for sure is somehow very elitäres Unterfangen. but there were ambitions at this time to design an end consumer product, and I can show this product show to you. This is the Geniac. Yeah, the Geniac was sold 55, and it consists mainly out of these programmable circles. Can be programmed by wiring, and so an interesting thing is, so I don't know how I think it was not a huge success at this time, but it's I think it's notable that it exists at this time. And it's also interesting that here computer music could be composed. I'm very sure that this computer couldn't play music, but it can be somehow composed. Don't ask me why. This is I haven't gone very deep into this Geniac thing, but I can, and this is the last thing I want to show you. One example, if not the first example of computer generated music, and this brings us back to the Cyra computer, this Australian computer, and because not only lights and not only monitors were used as a debugging interface, but also loudspeakers. You can imagine what the big advantage is from loudspeakers as a debugging tool. You must not stand in the front of the controlling unit. You can change broken parts and hear if you have the right one or not. So it makes you location independent as an operator. And this debugging tool, this loudspeaker, very simple loudspeaker, was used then to generate music. And this is what I want to give you on your way back home. We hear now maybe the very first computer-generated music.
Thank you. about you? You're working in this computer museum, or?
Yes, I'm working as.
yes, I'm. I build it up, and I'm a curator. So it's a pretty big collection. Meanwhile, located here in Berlin, we ran 4 years from 60, early 60, 97 until late 2000. A permanent exhibition here in Berlin, in the front house where the sea base is now located. You should know this place here around the corner in the Römerstraße. And since we closed our permanent exhibition, we're doing temporary projects with this collection, and this collection becomes bigger year by year. And I'm doing lectures, I'm writing about computer game history, and I'm doing exhibitions. Maybe if you are in Stuttgart in February, there we will open an exhibition only about Pong. It's yeah, it's a Pong history, which is very important for the founding of the whole computer game industry. But there are a lot of very recently made artworks which relates to Pong, and so we show a lot of these artworks. Blinking Lights, I'm sure you know, or this Pong game, and there are a lot of others. Last year, the Pong mechanic from Niklas Roy was shown here at the Congress, and so we compile all this Pong-related artworks, this Pong art, and then there's also a small Pong science section where Pong is used for high-tech research, interface research, and so on. So, hey! This is the end of my lecture. Okay, thank you.